It is a long day, and people have a ways to travel, so I'll try not to be too short, but if folks go on for a bit, we're going to have to maybe try to limit that. So please come forward and introduce yourself and the issue that's not on was not on today's agenda.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Madam Director, this was on the agenda, and I was waiting to raise my hand, but my name is Greg Tollefson. I'm the acting director of Five Valleys Land Trust, and I was going to urge you to support the assumption of the Gravely Hunting Access Agreement. And but I want to thank the department for the work, the cooperative efforts we've accomplished over years and years, and especially Randy and his crew now. It's just this is a wonderful 8,000-acre achievement, both for the continued ranching on that property and now for the public hunting access in perpetuity, whatever that is. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and please accept my apologies. I typically would have asked if there was anybody here from the organization or the ranch. So thank you for speaking up, and thank you for your work on this. Yes, please go ahead.
I'm Brian McCullough. 2217 9th Avenue here in Helena, and I'd like to appreciate the opportunity to speak with you folks. It was on some observations that I've made associated with cow elk hunting in Montana. I spent some time with the folks in licensing, and I found it interesting that general license elk licenses for since about 2010 have been pretty level, but resident elk cow elk tags, the B elk tags, have gone in 2010 to just over 19,000 to 2018 to almost 29,000. That's a 50% increase. So the general public interest in harvesting cow elk is strong and growing. And I think also it's kind of a gradual sort of thing from the standpoint that people are gradually becoming familiar with the new opportunities available for cow elk hunting in Montana. And for non-residents, it was more dramatic, but not as big in numbers. The non-resident in 2010 was about 900, and in 2018, it's up to 2,700. But now if we want to play the statistical game, we can say, well, it went up 300%. But anyway, there's growth in both areas. And I just wanted to highlight to the commission how the growth in that area is occurring. The second thing I wanted to identify is that you folks need to take some credit for the expanded opportunity for elk hunting in Montana. In 2019, there'll be over 50 districts that will have the elk shoulder seasons in them. And what you have is that you just identified the cost of purchasing land for additional public access. Well, guess what? This is where the elk are over management objective is not costing anything, but when you talk about increasing access for the cow elk opportunity during the elk shoulder season for over 50 hunting districts, that is a lot of ground and a lot of opportunity. So there's two things I'm suggesting that you guys consider putting out there and actually making a public statement in the press and having your public fellow out here go ahead and make this is, what is the number of acres involved in the elk shoulder season in 2019? And what are the number of hunting days? I see this in the paper all the time when you spend several million dollars for purchasing land, that this is what it's going to create. But I never see anything in here about what the shoulder hunt is providing. And quite frankly, you know, guess what? The landowners also ought to be getting a little benefit for this as well. And it's helping them, true, but it's taken us over 20 years to create this overpopulation. It isn't going to get solved overnight. Then the third item is performance measures on this. I would suggest that you consider when you're reviewing this, the shoulder season in August and the results and so on, that you look at changing the performance measures to be simply. Are the elk still over objective? If they are in a district, then yes, continue the shoulder season, and simple as that. This is the only cow elk management tool that has a performance measure that they're looking at possibly converting it or sunsetting it, even though it is one of the tools that is been proven to be helping deal with the problem with the over elk population. And the last but not least, to consider opening the shoulder season to include Forest Service lands. I think in terms of trying to bring elk to population, in my experience this last year, I got one cow on private land and one on forest land. But later in the shoulder season, there was a lot of places right close to private land where if the hunters had the authority to go ahead and shoot on the forest land, it would have helped your statistics. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Further public comment?
Chairman, Commissioners, Director Williams, I'm Scott Vollmer, fishing outfitter out of Bozeman. Also, I guess, former Madison NRC member. And I wanted to apologize to all of you for not being able to attend yesterday. I wanted to be here. I had a previously scheduled trip, and I couldn't get out of it. Luckily, I had one of my guides handle it today so I could be here. And really, the reason why I wanted to come here is I wanted to thank all of you for forming the committee. And personally, thank you personally for the opportunity to be on the committee and try to work for the best possible solution to the Madison. Like all of our committee members, I know we're disappointed that we couldn't send you a consensus decision. But I think there's a lot of great things that came out of that committee, and the biggest one being education and getting a lot of information out there to a lot of people who didn't realize in the past how that river works, including myself. We all got educated, and I think that will be really beneficial moving forward. And speaking of moving forward, Commissioner Byworth talked about it at the beginning of the meeting here today. There are some ideas out there, one of them in particular with fishing access sites that I think can have immediate helpful benefits, be beneficial for the river, and also can be a huge PR boost for the department. And I know that what we talked about as a MOGA member, what we talked about in the FAS Ambassadors Program, while it doesn't require your approval to the department, I think your endorsement of that program will have a lot of meaning and a lot of meaning going forward. So thank you for the opportunity to comment, and thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Vollmer, and thank you for being here today and for your work on the Advisory Council. Further public comment?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Director Williams. Good to see you. My name is Jim Brown. I'm an attorney based out of here and out of Dillon, and I'm here today representing the Upper Missouri River chapter of Walleyes Unlimited. I will have some handouts, so do I direct those to the... Okay. So the purpose of me being here today is just to build a record, public record, about the rulemaking petition that was submitted by the Upper Missouri River chapter of Walleyes Unlimited. Clearly that wasn't on the agenda today, so... This is the only opportunity for me to make remarks. So, for the record, on or about April 22nd, 2019, the Upper Missouri River Chapter of Walleyes Unlimited submitted to this commission a rulemaking petition pursuant to the authority Montana Code Annotated 24315. As this commission is aware, the chapter submitted a petition that in substance requested the commission start the process for formal rulemaking to seek public input and participation on the question of whether walleye located east of the Continental Divide should be designated as a native species. Contrary to what was represented by FWP Council during the last commission meeting, which I'm a little bit disappointed that this topic was taken up so informally, by the way, at the last commission meeting without public notice, the petition does not require the commission to adopt a rule designating the species as native. Rather, the petition requests the commission properly use its rulemaking authority to allow for public input and participation on the question of native status, which such process once started would allow the public to offer scientific materials and documents that address the native status question. I've brought another copy of the petition with me today and its attachments, and request that it be entered into the public meeting records for this meeting. I'd remind the Commission that under MCA 24315, the Commission has 60 days from the date of the submission of the petition to act on the petition by either denying the petition in writing or to initiate rulemaking proceedings. The 60-day time period, by my calculation, will expire on the 21st of June. As indicated to the Commission in my letter of June 6, which I hope you all got, and I dropped it off here. I don't know if you got it. Sounds like you did. Disappointingly, the Commission has taken no action to date on the petition, including noticing the petition up for discussion at this particular meeting. I brought another copy of my letter, and I also request that be entered into the record for this matter. I'm sure you're well aware at this point that it's the chapter's position that ignoring or failing to act on the petition is not a lawful option for the Commission. Contrary to representations by the department, the Commission clearly has authority to act on the petition. I set forth that for you in my letter. I hope you took a look at that. But the Commission is an agency, as the term agency is defined under Montana law. State agency, the Commission must act on the petition. Deny the petition, that's well within your rights to just bring it up and deny it, but to not act on it, I don't believe is a lawful option. Further, the Commission clearly has statutory authority to set policies for the protection, preservation, management of fish located within Montana, including native fish. I would direct you to the code, part of the code that governs your responsibilities and duties as commissioners, mainly MCA 871301. So it's the chapter's position that the Commission is violating its statutory obligations by not acting one way or other on the petition. I am informed secondhand, so this is hearsay at this point, but that the department believes that only the Natural Heritage Program has the authority to determine what is or is not a native species. If this assertion is true, and this is the department's position or the commission's position, I would ask you to think about what was the purpose for and the legal authority for the commission to task the department during its December meeting with conducting additional research onto the question of walleye native status earlier this year. Was that an exercise in futility? Was that a papermaking exercise? What was the consequence of that? Was there any legal implication to that? Think about that. Further, what is the Montana statutory and regulatory authority for the Natural Heritage Program to designate a species native or not native that is binding on this commission or the department? And if you know that, I'd certainly be interested, and I'm sure my clients would too. The Commission's and Department's assertion in this regard is curious, given the Commission's and Department's authority to manage fish in Montana. I mean, it's right there in statute. At this time, I will offer into the record of this public meeting that the chapter attached scientific studies to the petition that discuss native walleye status and that rebut or distinguish the studies and other scientific evidence considered by the Department during the February 28th 2009 presentation held in Helena, which was quite good, by the way. And again, I commend the staff for the excellent work they did on that. This isn't a criticism or a critique of the work of the department. Further, it is the chapter's position that the commission's failure to even consider the chapter's petition is denying the public the right to fully participate in the decision-making of the commission and its fish management plans and strategies. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. As I stated, the information is being submitted for the public record. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Further public comment? Items not on today's agenda.
Excuse me. Casey York again with Trap Free. Commissioners, Chairman Colton, Director Williams. First, I wanted to say thank you for being accommodating. I know we're running late and allowing people to have the extra time. I appreciate that. I'm going to try reading this so it can be a little more expedient. First off, mandatory trapper education bill did not, I repeat, it did not include a trap check. Not a 24-hour trap check, not a trap check at all in the language. That would have been a death sentence, as evidenced in the response to the actual trap check bill that was held before that. We have a couple of other requests. Mandatory reporting of all trapped species, including the non-targets. Only six species require reporting or tagging out of roughly 20 species that can legally be trapped. FWP says only 40% of trappers return the voluntary survey. Species also in the survey need to be separated rather than just weasel or skunk. We need to know which type of weasels, which type of skunks, especially civet skunks that are species of concern. It's beyond inconceivable to state otherwise that trapping is highly regulated. It's scientifically irresponsible that beaver can be trapped unlimited, unreported, 5.5 to 9 months out of the year for recreational purposes. They need to have a quota to start with. And we need more areas closed off to the trapping of beaver in order for them to serve their vital purpose in the ecosystem, such as water retention, wetlands, fire breaks, and so on. We also urge the closure of swift fox trapping in order to support their conservation strategic goals and objectives. Reports are only 2 to 3 trappers are making the quota of 10. Their pelt value is approximately the same as their weight, about $1 a pound, $7. Their reintroduction population suffered a market decline a few years back of at least 30%, probably more. Severe winter was given part of the blame. Well, we just had one heck of a severe winter with tons of snow. Over 37,000 cattle alone were reported killed because of the severe winter. Swift fox need more help to reach extensive and expensive conservation goals, and they're worth far more alive to many than dead to a few. Those trappers that like the notoriety of trapping a swift fox, which is, I'm told, that's what's driving them, not obviously the $7, they can help with reintroduction or science research. In light of severe winters, Providence is in Canada, have them also, and yet they have 24-hour trap checks or daily trap checks. What I've been told by the wardens isn't so much that a trap check would be difficult to enforce, it's that all their other tasks are hindering their ability to spend time in the field. Wardens in Montana each need to cover an area the size of Delaware, which should not be discounted. Law-abiding trappers will follow the law and be less concerned on being caught. Which brings me up to the next question. How are 48-hour trap checks for bobcat sets and designated lynx protection zones and for wolf trap sets being monitored and enforced? Lastly, apparently unknown or unclear, but in the wolf trapping regs, they already have the exception for trap setbacks aren't required on roads that are closed to highway or vehicle use other than snowmobiles and still open to the public. So I think that's pretty confusing. Unless I'm not understanding it, you can look at the 2018 regs, and I think it does. I think it sets a very dangerous precedence, and I know we had areas in the Bitterroot that were, you know, snowmobiled for cross-country skiing, and there was a whole big wind, you know, breakout when traps were getting set along those roads. And to extend that to other areas for all trapping, snares, conibears, is a real public safety issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments from the public?
Sure. Commissioners, again, I'm Nick Givak with the Montana Wildlife Federation, and just two really quick things. I think this Rob Ledford project is excellent. Some of you may know I have the good fortune of serving on the Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forest Working Group, and the forest did an environmental assessment to do aspen regeneration projects. They did a forest-wide EA so that we can come in and more efficiently do these, and we're actually going to take a tour of some of the work they're doing, and I think it fits in well with that. And Commissioner Byorth, since it's in your district, I realize we're all busy, but if you have time, maybe you can join us that day. I'll let you know when it is. So, And secondly, I just want to commend the department for the tremendous work put into this hunting regulations review. I learned a tremendous amount today that I didn't realize. I'd like to point out that per the rules we saw today, we're already seeing progress. We also, to simplify those, we also got that bill through, and please don't ask me the number this session, to move the hunting application date to April 1st. So, you know, we're already seeing moves toward that. I think they're good changes along with those ARM rules today. They're simpler, cleaner, easier to understand. I did find, and I fully realize John Vorey's exercise up there was hypothetical, but I do think that you'll see differences in the need for hunting districts from eastern Montana, where it's a much more homogenous landscape, to western Montana. I mean, if you six districts in Region 2, you would have to manage each one, I would think, by the most conservative standards. So, but again, I realize that was an exercise if it had gone to 20 or something. But anyway, I want to commend the department and be engaged as we continue to move forward with this. Thank you.
Any further public comment? Seeing none, before we adjourn,